Will the House come to order? Will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk take the roll?
20 members present.
We do not have a quorum present to conduct business. The roll is open. We now have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Pierce is, I believe, excused from the call of the House. May we have a brief excuse?
Would the House please stand at ease? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Furness be excused from the call of the House until plain time tomorrow.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, Representative Furness is excused to a plain time.
No other member is excused from the call of the House today.
Thank you. Our chaplain today is Pastor Mitch Patterson. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
Shall we pray? Eternal God, our Father, you, O God, who are the architect and the builder of all our institutions of human government, we stand before you this morning, Lord, with our heads hung low and our hearts lifted high before the throne of grace. We realize this morning, Father, that if a sparrow cannot fall without your notice, then surely no business of consequence can be rightly conducted without your aid. We therefore request your presence in these chambers, and we ask your blessing upon this August assembly. I pray, O God, that you would crown the heads of these whose business it is to govern with wisdom and grace their hearts with understanding. Let the words of their mouths and the meditations of their hearts be found acceptable in thy sight. And as they leave this place, O God, at the conclusion of this day's business, let the sweet fragrance of thy presence linger about them and be ever and always a reminder that it is not men who ultimately govern, but God. Hear our prayer this morning, Lord, for we offer it in Christ Jesus' name, and for that blessed name's sake we pray. Thank you, Lord, for hearing prayer, and amen.
Representative Larson, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent to prayer be spread on the journal.
Are there any objections as to having the prayer spread upon the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk...
Could we have a brief at ease, please?
Representative Barnes, would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I apologize. There was another excused absence today that I neglected to mention, Representative Pierce, who's excused until 10 p.m. this evening.
Would the clerk at this time please certify the legislative journal for the 103rd, 104th, and the 105th legislative day?
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 103rd, 104th, and 105th day in House Supplement Number 10.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House journals be approved as certified by the clerk for the 103rd, 104th, 105th days, plus House Supplement Number 10.
Are there any objections as to the correctness of the journal and the supplement? Hearing no objections, the journals and the supplement stand approved. Do we have any guests for introduction today? Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a constituent visiting Juneau here. She's an elementary school teacher worked for LKSD and is presently on a one-year sabbatical. She's taught in the communities of Kasigluk, Makoriak, and Tuksuk. Please help me welcome Cindy Hall.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B, I have a constituent of mine and my father-in-law, the Reverend Roland Peretti.
Any further guests for introduction? Messages from the governor?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate?
The Senate has approved the following citations, and they are transmitted for consideration. Honoring Dr. Joe Cooper, honors the retirement, and in memoriam Arthur Ipixson. And the Senate also approved the following, and they've been enrolled. Honoring Miles Brown, honoring the Valdez Buccaneers wrestling team, honoring Jack Runser, and in memoriam Mildred Parsons.
Those citations for our consideration will be referred to the Rules Committee for calendaring.
The Senate has passed the following, and they are transmitted for consideration. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 150, Finance, by the Finance Committee. An act relating to bonds issued for school construction and providing for an effective date.
One standing committee, Finance.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 162, CNRA, amended by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. An act relating to fisheries business tax refunds to local government and providing for an effective date.
Community and Regional Affairs and the Finance Committee.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 195, Finance, by the Finance Committee. An act making an appropriation to the Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Public Health, for the Alaska AIDS Program and providing for an effective date.
Health and Social Services and the Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications that should come before this body?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down the daily order of business to reports of standing committees.
The State Affairs Committee has considered House Concurrent Resolution 23 relating to the 19th Annual Girls State, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Ulmer Chairman, concurring Menard, Hoffman, Boucher, Martin, and Ulmer. House Concurrent Resolution number 23 has no further referral. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Concurrent Resolution 24, the 21st Annual Boys State, recommends it do pass, attaches a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by Ulmer Chairman, signing Dupas, Menard, Hoffman, Boucher, Martin, and Ulmer. House Concurrent Resolution 24 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 40, creating the Telecommunication Information Agency in the Office of the Governor, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 40, Finance, with a new title, recommends it Dupas, adopts a House Finance Letter of Intent, and attaches two zero notes with analysis. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring Adams, Porchot, Gall, Larson, Swackhammer, Boyer, Rieger, Frank, Brown, and Davis. House Bill 40 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 113, Supplemental Appropriations to the Department of Education for Pupil Transportation and Tuition Students, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 113, Finance, with a new title, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring Adams, Porchot, Larson, Gall, Swackhammer, Boyer, Wallace, and Brown. Having no recommendation, Rieger, Frank, and Davis. House Bill 113 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 132, approving and ratifying restrictions on expenditures, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 132, Finance, with a new title, and recommends it do pass, and attaches a 10 fiscal note. Report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring Adams, Porchot, Larson, Gall, Swackhammer, Boyer, Wallace, and Brown. Having no recommendation, Rieger, Frank, and Davis. House Bill 132 has no further referral. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 217, Purchase of Foreign Investments by the Board of Trustees of the Alaska Permanent Fund, reports it back as follows. The report was signed by Ulmer, Chairman, signing Dupas, Boucher, and Ulmer. Having no recommendation, Menard and Martin. Hoffman signed, do not pass. House Bill 217 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Hess Committee has considered House Bill 237, relating to murder, assault, and the physical and sexual abuse of children, the admissibility of certain evidence in criminal prosecutions, amending Rule 404 of the Alaska Rules of Evidence, and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 237 Hess with a new title. Reports it back as follows with one fiscal note, three zero fiscal notes and one zero note with analysis. Report was signed by Kopanen and Ellis, and signing no recommendation, Hanley, Ellis, Kopanen, Hudson, Gruenberg, Phillips, and Donnelly. House Bill 237 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 281, placing students employed in state institutions in the exempt service, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero note with analysis. The report was signed by Ulmer Chairman, signing do pass, Boucher, Menard, Hoffman, and Martin. Ulmer has no recommendation. House Bill 281 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 33 Hess, relating to violation of compulsory education laws, recommends it be replaced with HCS for committee substitute for Senate Bill 33 Hess with the same title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Sund Chairman, concurring Sund, Ulmer, Gruenberg, Taylor, and Cotton. Senate Bill 33 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee is considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 87, Labor and Commerce, relating to the credit card interest rate that may be charged by certain financial institutions, and reports it back as follows. The report was signed by Sun Chairman, signing due pass, Grunberg, Taylor, and Barnes. Signing do not pass, Sund and Cotton. Ulmer has no recommendation. Senate Bill 87 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee has considered Senate Bill 139, Wages and Benefits for Certain Legislative Employees, recommends it be replaced with a House Committee substitute with the same title, recommends it do pass, and attaches a zero note with analysis. Report was signed by Adams Chairman, concurring Adams, Porchot, Larson, Gall, Swackhammer, Wallace, Davis, and Boyer, having no recommendation, Rieger, Frank, and Brown. Senate Bill 139 has no further referral. The Resources Committee has considered Senate Bill 167, Grants for Water Supply, Sewage, and Solid Waste Facilities, and Establishing a Revolving Loan Fund, recommends it be replaced with a House Committee substitute with the same title, recommends it do pass, and adopts a House Resources Letter of Intent. Report was signed by Cotton Chairman, signing do pass, Sun, Pierce, Hoffman, Springer, Herman, Cotton, Davidson, and LeVar. Senate Bill 167 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
I have none.
This brings us down to introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring the Fairview community by Representative Brown.
That'll go to rules for calendaring.
House Resolution Number 9 by Sund and Taylor, relating to the development of the mineral resources in the state.
Resources Committee.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Brings us down to introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
House Bill 302 by Ulmer, an act relating to credited service for part-time teachers in the teachers' retirement system.
That'll go to State Affairs and Health, Education, and Social Services.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to the consideration of today's calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on that calendar?
House Bill 78 by Miller, an act relating to the operation of farm equipment on state highways. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 78, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, reports it back as follows with 3-0 fiscal notes. Report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, signing due pass, Menard, Davidson, and Kopanen, having no recommendation, Furness, Donnelly, and Ellis. The Transportation Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 78, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, recommends it do pass, and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Cato, Chairman, signing due pass, Springer, Pierce, Miller, Hudson, and Cato. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having one committee substitute, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the body adopt the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for House Bill number 78.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the CS Labor and Commerce? Hearing no objection, the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute has been adopted. Does the clerk have any amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no further amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for House Bill number 78 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the motion to advance from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 78, Labor and Commerce, by the Labor and Commerce Committee, an act relating to the operation of farm equipment on state highways.
Third reading, under debate. Are you ready for the question?
Question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 78, Labor and Commerce, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
37 yeas, no nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 78, Labor and Commerce, has passed the House.
Mr. Minority Leader?
Could we move up the calendar to introduction of guests, Mr. Speaker?
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections.
Speaker, I'd like to introduce to the body two constituents of myself and Representative Rieger and ask you to help me welcome them. They're here to, on their own nickel, to watch government in action. It's Earl and Margie Davis of Dalrier. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Springer. Would the House stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we just completed the first business on today's calendar. Would the clerk please read the next item, please?
House Bill number 156 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act increasing the motor fuel tax. The Transportation Committee has considered the bill and recommends it as follows and attaches a zero note with analysis. The report was signed by Cato Chairman, signing DuPass, Hudson, and Cato, having no recommendation, Pierce, and Springer. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 156 Finance with a new title, recommends it DuPass, adopts a House Finance letter of intent, and attaches three fiscal notes. The report was signed by Adams Chairman, signing DuPass, Adams, Porchot, Larson, Gall, Swackhammer, Boyer, Brown, and Davis, having no recommendation, Rieger, Frank, and Wallace. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having one committee substitute, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill number 156 be adopted.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the CS Finance? Hearing no objection, the committee substitute Finance has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no further amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill number 156 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objection to the motion to advance from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 156 Finance by the Finance Committee, an act relating to the motor fuel tax.
Third reading, under debate. Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask, to begin with, what is the reason for increasing taxes on motor fuel? The majority in the House in the past have made it very clear that they absolutely are opposed to a sales tax because it is a regressive tax and that they don't want to hurt the poor people the most, the ones who have to suffer on the economic scales whenever we tax. But I fail to see where they don't see that the motor fuel tax is probably the most harmful regressive tax that they can impose on the poor people. A lot of people in our state don't realize now that they do pay 8 cents a gallon to the state for taxes, and now we're going to double that to 16 cents a gallon. It is the poor people who have the vehicles that guzzle up the gas the most. Those in middle income or higher income can afford the new cars where you can get maybe 20, 25 miles to the gallon. But for us poor folks, you can only get cars or Ford cars that use gas at 10 miles, 11 miles a gallon. And also, this taxes the working people the hardest, the people who travel maybe 10, 12 miles a day to get to work. So in disguise, it's a tax against productivity. It's a tax against those people who are willing to get out and work for a living, and therefore decreases the pay that they have indirectly for their home needs. You say, oh, it's just a little bit. It's only maybe, if a person used 20 gallons of gas a week, which is pretty conservative, that means about $1.60 a week. Well, that's a carton of milk on the kid's table. And so that's 52 cartons of milk at the end of the year. Then you say, well, we're going to have to raise the poor people welfare check to make up for that loss and buying power. Also, a very hidden increase in taxes to the people is the off-highway use. You have your farmers, you have your mineral people, you have your timber people, who their off-road fuel tax is going to be increased, not just a few cents, but by 500%, from 2 cents a gallon to 5 cents a gallon. And it's the people here again who are going to pay for that. For higher timber prices, we're trying to get a better bargain with Japan or the Pacific countries to be competitive with them, to sell our timber products, our mineral products, our coal to them, and yet you're increasing the cost directly to the producers, and we're becoming less competitive. I fail to see why we need to do that, and especially in a time when we had hundreds of millions of dollars that were just given out. Why further strangle the private enterprise in producing and being making available jobs for our people?
Then there's another point that would definitely be a hidden cost to the average consumer, and that is on your utility bills, which will have a significant increase in the cost of your heating or your fuel. And I just think at a time today when the private sector is having to cut back on their costs, when the average citizen is having a reduction in their pay, to impose a tax upon them when it's completely unnecessary.
Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd be the first to say that this is not a good bill. I do, however, think it's a necessary bill and it's a fair bill. No one likes to support or put forward tax measures. This is a tax measure. It's clear, though, that I think this is, as we said before, I mean, we're going to be saying this over and over, we are in tough financial straits. We do have a shortfall on our proposed spending plan versus our revenue that are expected under our normal tax codes for FY88, and we do have to take some measures to bridge this gap. This is one of those measures. I think the $33.5 million that the tax would raise is vitally necessary. It's a component of the spending plan that we will be bringing before the House this year. And I also think it's fair, and I want to in part address some of the concerns raised by the prior speaker in this regard. This isn't a tax that I think equates to a sales tax or an income tax. I think in an economic sense, you could characterize it as a regressive tax, but I think a better characterization is a user fee. This is a user fee. The people who benefit from our roads, from our ferry, from our road operations and maintenance and capital construction projects, are the people driving the cars and are going to be the people who are paying the tax. This tax will, like I said, raise about $33 million, of which $20 million is directly this year going to be put back into the DOT budget for road operation and maintenance in our ferry operation system. Last Friday on this floor, Mr. Speaker, we heard a lot of people complaining and pointing out the inadequacies of the DOT operating budget in the overall operation, state operating budget that passed this floor. This tax measure addresses those concerns. That $20 million, $14.9 million of which goes directly back, not into even administration within the Department of Transportation, but directly into operations and maintenance of our road system. Another $5.5 million goes directly back into the operations of our ferry system, directly related to transportation. That exceeds somewhat the amount of money in this tax expected to be collected from the public, from you and I and our motor vehicles. In addition, the total costs of DOT, the total costs of building our and maintaining our roads and our ferry system vastly exceeds the total amount of revenues expected to be raised under both this tax and our existing 8 cents a gallon tax, which raises approximately $26 million. Even if you just look at our highway maintenance and operation budget alone for 86, which is really the last good year of adequate funding levels, that figure is nearly $70 million compared to the $59 million total which would be raised by under this legislation. So by any criteria, we highway users are still getting a break for the privilege of driving on our road system and utilizing our state transportation system.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition to this bill. I would like to associate myself with the remarks of the senior member from District 13, who spoke first in opposition to the bill, rather than reiterate all those points. However, I would point out that this bill, in my opinion, is a regressive tax. And one of the groups of people in this state that I think that it is going to hurt the very most is, in fact, the truckers of our state that we have forced into competing with a state agency. That state agency, of course, being the Alaska Railroad. And, Mr. Speaker, the truckers in this state at this time are in a very dire strait. Many of them are going out of business. And here, in fact, we are imposing another tax on that group of people. That is, to say the least, about all the other working people in the state that are just barely making ends meet. Mr. Speaker, in fact, we do have a DOT budget that is not what it should be. But should we not look to establishing our priorities a little better? I think so. I think that we need to look at establishing priorities that meet the needs of the people across the board, and I don't think that's done in the budget that was passed on Friday.
Representative Gruenberg.
Can we please have a brief at ease?
The House will stand at ease. Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we have the bill before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Phillips, you've been seeking the floor.
Mr. Speaker, I too oppose this this bill, which raises the motor fuel tax from 8 cents a gallon to 16 cents. And just to reflect the prior speaker from District 14, I do believe that this budget that we had passed for FY88, the operating budget, the priorities are not there. And I think that roads and maintenance of roads is one of the basic needs that people want, and rightfully so. The other problem I have with this bill is we're generating $33.5 million, but yet only put in 20.5, and I don't think that's fair. I think if we're going to do it, the whole 33.5 should go in the maintenance and operations of our highways throughout the state, as well as the marine highway system.
Any further debate? Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess I need some clarification on part of the bill that is not up for change and consideration, and that's on line 21, where we're taxing presently we're taxing 5 cents a gallon on watercraft, and I wonder if somebody could explain the justification for that tax. I know in western northern Alaska, on the Kuskokwim and on the Yukon rivers, there are very few small boat harbors, and many of the people that are that depend upon the rivers utilize their boats as their primary source of transportation, not only for transportation but use in subsistence. And I too, I guess, feel that that 5 cents a gallon is regressive, and I wonder if someone can explain to me how that 5 cents a gallon is presently spent by the state.
Representative Porchot.
Mr. Speaker, as the former speaker pointed out, this was not a consideration in the bill before us. It's only reprinted because it's in the same section. So I don't think I can really do justice to that, other than saying that in 1980, the state, as an example of the services provided for water carriers, there was a bond issue of several tens of millions of dollars, of which substantial millions of dollars went to dock improvements, and I don't know whether that occurred in the member's district or not, but the state does construct docks and does put up navigation aids and things that directly benefit water carriers.
Mr. Minority Leader?
I call the House on the bill, Mr. Speaker.
Okay, the House has been called on the bill. We have just one member off the floor, but it is under debate. Representative Wacky.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I would also like to add, and I guess it's still a question, that the representative from Eagle River brought up. The bill does show that there's approximately $33.6 million that will be generated, with only $20.5 going to maintenance of highways, plus another $5 million going to ferry systems. The other problem I have with the bill is, and again, it's another question, why did we only raise the tax on those people using the highway and not look at raising the tax. If we are indeed going to be raising fuel taxes, why are we not raising fuel taxes on all entities in the state? Because there is an expense not only for ferry system and for hive system, but for the harbors and for the airports. If we indeed are going to have a fuel tax in front of us at this time, then I think it is only fair that we tax everybody in the state, and if we aren't, then we don't belong having this bill in front of us the way it is right now. Thank you.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think when the first speaker mentioned a user tax, I would have to agree. I didn't realize what magnitude that user tax upon which those things would apply. I think that when we're looking at diesel fuel, we're looking at much more than just pulling up to the gas tank and filling up our car. When we recognize that when hydropower is not sufficient, or when many communities switch to diesel-powered generation for utilities, that they would be facing considerable expense and an increase in expenses for their utilities. So I think this certainly is a far-reaching tax, and much more so than I originally anticipated when I began reviewing the bill.
Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to respond to several questions that have been raised. First, on the equity of the question of why isn't all the money that's raised by the tax put back into the DOT budget? It's actually, the answer is one of equity. Only about $18.8 million are actually raised through increased fuel taxes for the motoring public. There's a couple million dollars more than is really raised by highway users put back into the DOT budget. The rest of the money comes from off-highway users who are, again, not little ATV users. I'm talking about it's primarily North Slope industrial users. On the other question of equity regarding why aren't we raising the aviation fuel tax, or why aren't we using the marine highway tax, there are different use patterns associated with those modes of transportation. For example, in aviation, the aviation fuel tax is raised primarily from international and large domestic carriers at the Anchorage and Fairbanks International Airport. These same carriers pay a fuel flowage tax and landing fees for every time they land. Those two fees contribute substantially to the operations of our international airports and raise millions of dollars. That money is, and those fees are more directly aligned to the services the state provides for aviation service people. An increase in aviation fuel tax would probably hurt the state economically by further encouraging carriers to overfly Anchorage and Fairbanks and not pay additional fuel costs. Additionally, in our rural airports, again, a better way of assessing those fees, which the DOT is now looking at, is through tie-downs and landing fees at each airport. Fuel costs aren't necessarily directly related to the type of maintenance activities on an airstrip per se. There are better ways of dealing with assessing those types of user fees. Similarly, the ferry system clearly raises $30 million or so through walk-on tickets and direct revenues. So, and yet their mileage per se in the waters is not directly related to any state expenditure, only that time that they spend at a dock, and clearly they have additional revenues being raised for them. And finally, on the last issue raised as far as possible impacts on this tax on consumers of utilities, this tax only covers motor vehicles. The diesel charges are only related to motor vehicle diesel charges, primarily trucks. It does not include any additional taxes on diesel fuel used in power generation or similar non-highway uses.
Representative Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would back up the previous speaker by noting that in the case of the marine highway system, people pay fares. Those of us who drive on the public roads, of course, don't pay any toll. But the fares, if I remember correctly, on the marine highway system meet about 50% of the cost of the operation of the marine highway system. The marine highway system, I wish to point out, doesn't reach Fairbanks, so I'm not arguing in favor for that reason. But the highway tax, when we discussed this in the 13th legislature, I remember at that point, when we were flush with money and rebuilding and maintaining all kinds of things, roughly paid about 10% of the cost of the highway. Since then, of course, with cutbacks, it pays a higher share, but comes nowhere near the cost of maintenance and operations on our highway system in the state. And again, even if all of the sum from this increase went to highways, even the off-road users portion, it would not come near to the amount paid by the marine highway system. Similarly, people who live in our larger communities are provided with municipal transport by the people mover, by the metropolitan area commuters service in Fairbanks, and the Capital Transit and similar lines here in Juneau and elsewhere. And the people who ride those buses pay fares. I think we are beginning to approach, but do not yet reach the portion on the cost of operation of those bus systems or the marine highway systems by the users through this increase in our fuel tax. So we are still continuing to subsidize our favorite charity, the automobile. Thank you.
Representative Taylor, you've been seeking the floor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had asked a question earlier of representative from Anchorage, who's been so kind as to answer a lot of questions on this this issue, and I still haven't heard an answer to that one. And that question involved the Alaska Railroad and whether or not those diesel engines on the Alaska Railroad would be paying that additional 8 cents also, or are we just going to further drive the two competing forces? Truckers would be paying the 8 cents to haul the produce down the highway, but the railroad train that's using the same kind of diesel to drag the cars wouldn't be, and if so, I'd like an answer to that. And I guess I have an additional concern, and that is it seems like a major portion of this tax is apparently being targeted towards major users up on the slope or someplace that are using these fuels. And the sad part about that is whenever this legislature takes a shot at those oil companies, that bullet kind of ricochets, Mr. Speaker, and it bounces down to southeast Alaska and hits right in the middle of our timber industry down here, too. Because most all the trucks operating down there are not operating on state highways. They're operating on road systems that the logger and the federal government in combination have built. And as a consequence, this is going to directly impact all of those truckers, too, and all of their diesel fuel needs in the logging industry. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that's what the direct impact is going to be. Now, I'm very supportive of the needs of the marine highway system and of DOT, but I might suggest the body that the other body has found a method of fully funding, or darn near fully funding that has not involved any additional fuel tax. And so as a consequence, I'm very hopeful that we also might be able to find that in our budget. But I would like an answer to that question about the railroad and the truckers, if I could, and also whether or not this will directly impact my logging industry, as I've suggested.
Representative Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think possibly I can refer to the representative from Wrangell's question about the railroad. The railroad, in our Railroad Act, the railroad, as all state vehicles and things like that, are exempt. The railroad is exempt from the motor fuel tax. However, there's one thing we have to take in consideration, and that is the railroad does not run on the highway. It has a base and a maintenance and operation of its own. Therefore, the railroad actually, you couldn't call it a user's tax for the railroad in as much as they do not use our highways. They have their own track and their own bed. And I think that's probably as close as I can come to saying why they don't pay a motor fuel tax.
Representative Hoffman.
May we have a brief at ease, please?
Okay, would the House stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we have the bill before us under third reading. Representative Hoffman.
Yes,
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to go back to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment.
Hearing objections, we'll give the representative just a little latitude to discuss that amendment.
Well, my primary reason for presenting the amendment is that I see that the highway, the aviation fuel tax is 2.5 cents, and we have a pretty large infrastructure to maintain there. And then there's a tax of 5 cents on watercraft fuel. And impressions from traveling throughout the state that we don't have that large of an infrastructure. So why do we have to have twice as much tax on fuel for aviation and than we do on watercraft? And I'm just bringing up a fair and equitable issue here and want to treat both taxes equally.
Okay, the motion before us is a move back to second reading. Representative Sund.
Speaker, a little bit of latitude. I'm going to point out why I'm objecting to this. That this is an existing law, the 5 cents a gallon, and a lot of that tax is paid in my district, in my area. That's a motor fuel tax on watercraft. And there's one point here that all we've asked for in the maritime industry is that we pay our share. And we've asked for, we have fish hatcheries, we have boat harbors. We have commercial fish management and comm fish. We pay a raw fish tax. We pay a motor fuel tax on watercraft. And all that we've asked is that the government manage the resource properly and maintain some infrastructure point of view. And I'm going to oppose the amendment. I think it's fair the way it is now, and we're not coming in here, from my point of view anyway, and asking for a tax decrease in the same year that we're asking for support in the budget for water-related issues.
Okay, are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 156 Finance be returned to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
24 yeas, 14 nays.
Okay, the bill is back before us in second reading. A motion to move amendment number one. Representative Hoffman.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I move amendment number one and ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objection.
I don't have any other additional remarks than I previously stated. I just think that this is a fair and equitable issue, and I think that the under the present legislation, watercraft is receiving an unfair tax burden.
Any further debate on amendment number one? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
13 yeas, 25 nays.
Amendment number one has failed adoption. The bill is back before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the discussion prior to the representative taking the floor for the amendment, there was discussion on the use of the highways and whether or not we should be paying our fair share through a gasoline tax to maintain and keep these roads up. Mr. Speaker, I submit to you that the drivers on these highways are more than paying their fair share. I'd like to point out that the federal government does give to the state, and I believe last year, I'm sure there's someone here that knows the exact figure, but I believe it was somewhere between $150 and $200 million to the state that was to be used for our highway system. That's part of the tax that we pay on gasoline. In addition to that, we've been paying 8 cents a gallon state tax. So I believe that the state, in fact, is deriving the revenue that it takes to keep up the state highway system from a state tax and a federal tax. In addition to that, Mr. Speaker, while I am most supportive of the marine highway system, because I believe it does a great deal not only to move people goods and services in Southeast Alaska, but it has a direct bearing on our tourist industry. But I would like to reflect that I believe that the state has been subsidizing the marine highway system to the tune of about $60 million a year, give or take a few dollars. So I don't want any of us to be misled. And again, I do support the marine highway system and the subsidy that we give, because I believe it does have a direct bearing on our state's economy. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I've sat silent the last couple days and listened to the discussion of the budget, and it troubles me a little bit that the issue of revenues and the issue of spending have gotten quite so mixed up. We speak about priorities in state spending, and I heard people say today that the budget did not include funds for transportation adequate to meet the basic needs of the people, and yet when the issue of where the money is coming from comes up, I don't hear very much talk. But I rise today to express my thoughts on the last remarks which were just made on the term subsidy when it's used in relation to the marine highway system. You can't subsidize what you own. It's the people who travel the marine highway system that are subsidizing the marine highway system. The marine highway system is part of our basic transportation system in Alaska. It's the transportation system upon which all industrial development depends. It's the transportation system on which every community in southeastern Alaska depends. It receives its share of federal monies because it is a highway system. It is a state highway system. It is not a private enterprise being subsidized by the state of Alaska. The passengers on the marine highway system are the people who subsidize the highway system. Just in the same way as everybody who's spoken about this tax today has pointed out, that this would be an opportunity for the public to pay a user fee, a subsidy to the state for its transportation responsibilities. Likewise, the passengers are subsidizing the marine highway system. I'm saying it over and over again because over and over again, year after year, we hear people talking about the state subsidizing the marine highway system, and once and for all, we've got to get this straightened out. The state operates the marine highway system. The state is responsible for the marine highway system. The state has an obligation to the communities of coastal Alaska to ensure that their transportation system is maintained, and it is the people through user fees who are subsidizing the marine highway system. It is not the other way around. Thank you.
Representative Hudson, you've been seeking the floor.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I guess I would like to rise on the very same issue. We like to refer to the additional funds from the general fund to operate the ferry system as operations and maintenance, much the same as on highways. And I'd like very much for this body to try to plant that in their mind. This system does generate approximately $30 million a year out of about a $60 million a year operations from its own internal taxes, cost of fares, fees. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised but what those fares and fees don't go up this year to try to provide for the shortfall that we will not be able to provide it in this year's operation. So I'd like, you know, I'm paying a great deal of attention, and I want us all to be fair, both to the highways and to the marine highways here. So let's start referring to this not as a subsidy, but as an operations and maintenance fee. Thank you.
Representative Copeland, you've been seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I noted that 1% of the fund will be set aside, accounted for separately, and made available for appropriation for air quality enhancement programs in non-attainment areas throughout the state. And of course, that's in large part due to heavy commutation in some of the larger communities of the state. I was wondering if any thought had been given perhaps to increasing the cost of leaded gasoline, which is one of the major pollutants, by perhaps another cent. And I say that noting that all of my vehicles use leaded gasoline, and several of them are old enough that they even escaped the the inspection for air quality control because they were built before all of the gadgets were invented. But nevertheless, I think that this might be another way of approaching it at either in this bill or at a future time. I am not offering an amendment. I'm just asking a question.
Representative Cotton, you've been seeking the floor.
Mr. Speaker, I wasn't going to respond to that question. I was just going to make another observation that I remember working on DOT's budget a couple of times, and the people that from the administration that managed the budgets pointed out that, yes, in fact, every year we did spend $150 million federal dollars for construction projects, plus whatever state dollars we happened to put in that year. So you may see a straight line on a graph showing the level of funding for construction projects. But every time you keep that line going straight on construction, the line goes this way on operation and maintenance. So every year that we add to our highway system, we also add lane miles that need to be plowed, need to be upgraded, need to be maintained. And that's something that shouldn't be missed. I know in my district in particular, we expect to see an additional lane going to Anchorage and an additional lane coming back out to Eagle River. And we're hoping to see another bridge be built across Eagle River. All of these things have associated maintenance costs, and I think most people are willing to accept those additional fees, if you will, when they actually see something for it. And I think in the case of our district, we definitely will see something for it.
Representative Martin.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I very much appreciate the gentleman from Fairbanks bringing up the issue of air quality. And I was wondering if the committee had looked into it last year or the year before last. Congress did pass a law that literally prohibits now all regular gas as of January 1st, 1989, to be used. So in the lower 48, I understand that many of those stations have already pretty well switched over because of national environmental concerns. And now it will be non-leaded gas sold all over the nation. So to have this specifically put in the bill that 1 cent per gallon will go for air quality, we know that it absolutely will improve, hopefully, unless the people in Fairbanks may be using something else to run on. So I feel that it's really not necessary to have put that in as a specific line item, that perhaps after 89 we'll see a tremendous improvement in the two major cities that seem to have this problem, and that the unleaded gas will solve its own problem because that's for sale. But it does bring up another problem, and that other problem is that the average citizen is going to pay more for non-leaded gas, definitely, because it's going to be the competition. And here we are already increasing the taxes on that. And the people who have the old automobiles, maybe they'll be able to get rid of them. And if they get into the new automobiles, if they can afford them, then we'll have no quality problems. I do see two other things that I want to bring up and ask the major person who worked on the details if he could answer these questions. I was wondering why the committee or the subcommittee did not look into repealing the credit programs rather than continuing that. It seems to me that we're having a tremendous amount of paperwork and auditors going to gas stations, I was told just this morning, and going to the major distributors of our fuel industries and constantly just going around and checking their records to see how much credit they deserve for off-highway usage and so on. And ironically, the savings that they have in here, if we just repeal the credits, would equal out, we would save tremendous amount of administration paperwork and just say, well, instead of raising your costs of fuel, we're just going to repeal the tax credit. And that in itself will give the DOT a lot of excess bodies who are running around now doing audits. Maybe they can do something else. And also, as the gentleman from South Anchorage, Goodwood, mentioned, and one other person mentioned, right now we're receiving about $24, $25 million on our gas taxes to the Department of through general funds. So I see no reason why they increase the taxes beyond the needs of maintenance and operation of the roads. What will the other $10 million, $13 million be used for? Hopefully not more bureaucracy, because you already have that in place. And I just fail to see why you should raise more taxes than what you need if you say the whole purpose is to guarantee that we'll have monies for operation and maintenance.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let me try to address some of the questions that were raised. I don't think I have the answers for all of them. But first, to the representative from the university district, we did discuss perhaps adding a tax for the leaded gas, and found that no state separated those out, and we felt that the tax overall would address the concern of lead in the gasoline. And to answer some of the remarks of the representative from Anchorage, actually lead is not the only contaminant that we're dealing with. We're dealing with carbon monoxide, and that's the real issue here. The lead, of course, in the atmosphere is something, but to be concerned of. But there are other concerns associated with the use of gasoline in our populated areas. And the other thing to say that to this one issue of the money set aside for non-attainment of air quality is it's permissive language. It's not money that is allocated to those communities. I hope that answers some of the questions that were raised during the debate.
Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let me try my hand at the remaining couple of questions raised by my colleague from District 13. On the issue of why didn't we just repeal the credits, repealing the credit would yield about $12 million a year. But frankly, that wasn't considered because of the fairness question, that the repeal was put in so that people who weren't using the highway systems weren't shouldering the same burden that the people who were using the highway system were doing. So that would, repealing the credit, while it would yield $12 million, which is still short, by the way, of what we want to add back into DOT, it would really it would exacerbate the equity question. Then the second major point that was mentioned is, what is the $13 million for above and beyond the $20 million that's put back into the operation maintenance of our highway and ferry system? Clearly, that is money that returns to the general fund. And are we building bureaucracy with that? You can call it anything you want. I mean, you can pick any $13 million in the budget, I guess, and call it that. But let me, as long as we're talking about DOT, let's call it DOT money. I mean, this money that we're raising is just a fraction of what we're anticipating appropriating to DOT this year. $140 million just to DOT to run our highways, build our highways, and our ferry systems. So in a way, the $13 million could be viewed as going into the general fund requirement of DOT.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Wallace, you have not spoken. Are you ready? Representative Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sorry to take up additional time, but I wish to commend the representative from Eagle River for bringing up one of the reasons for the increased cost, and that is the fact that we have built and are continuing to build more highways. I note that the tax itself has not increased since 1961, and perhaps if we return to the practices of 1961, that might lower the cost. I remember that we closed the Richardson Highway over Thompson Pass at that time. We also closed the Taylor Highway in the winter, the Steith and Elliott Highways north of Olness and Chattanooga, respectively, which of course would close down the Dalton Highway. It saved a tremendous amount on snow plowing and perhaps I haven't heard that alternative suggested yet, but I'm sure somebody was thinking of that.
Taylor Highway's closed. Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. During one of the recesses, I did have an answer to my question as to the effect, and I thought the body should be aware of it, on the off-highway user in my district, the timber industry and the guy running the gravel truck. This is a 500% increase. He presently pays 8 cents a gallon, gets a 6 cent credit, so he pays 2 cents net. With this new increase, he'll be paying 16 cents, getting a 6 cent credit, and paying 10 cents on the gallon. So that's a 500% increase. It's a 100% increase on every single one of my constituents that drives an automobile, as far as tax is concerned. And if I could really believe that DOT had taken the cuts, then maybe I wouldn't see so many of those high salaries over in DOT. There's still most of them there. The frustrating part, I guess, Mr. Speaker, is that during the years when we had multi-billion dollar capital projects, DOT expanded its engineering and design section dramatically. Most of those positions are still sitting over there under CIPs, and that's capital improvement project funding. In other words, the project itself is supposed to be funding those people.
And those folks are still sitting there. Those that retired and moved out of there, well, the guys right underneath them just moved up into the new position, so we got worked over pretty good on that early retirement thing, too. But there's been no dramatic increase in that section, and I believe they could have dramatically decreased that section, especially since we haven't built a capital project, and we haven't even seen the funding on our capital projects from last year yet be released. So as a consequence, I really am frustrated with DOT that if, in fact, as one of the former speakers said, this additional $13 million is going to go to DOT, maybe they ought to put the money back into the road graders and out of the design department first so that we can keep our highways open. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gold.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's a little unusual, but I'd like to agree with the previous remarks. I think there's a real need to take a look at consolidation within the Department of Transportation. I think it's a good agency, and the people who work in it are sincere individuals and do a good job. But as all our agencies are under pressure right now, and the need to consolidate is a very real need, I'm going to be requesting that that agency provide us back with some information regarding ways that they can cut back in the design and areas, not only within the roads, but also within the ferries, and look to consolidate those offices as much as possible so that we can direct, where we can, more efforts out into the field. And I just feel that since we're on the subject of raising revenues for transportation, it is worthwhile to underline that today in public, and I appreciate the opportunity to raise the issue.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Along the same topic, as I was reading through the backup information on this particular bill, I noticed that it did call for the development of a task force. And one of the people on that task force is a project manager, consultant assistant, at a salary of $41,250. The same questions came to mind. I know that we do have engineers and planners in the Department of DOT, and recognizing this is certainly an insignificant amount of money, I still question why we have to hire a project manager for this task force when there should be people available within DOT to perform that service.
Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I asked the DOT the same question. We reduced their original request by several months' time of the project manager. We also reduced the overall amount from $100,000 to $81,000 for this task force. I guess I was persuaded in the end that, believe it or not, indeed, that they didn't necessarily have a free man floating around that could undertake this process. This process, by the way, is not simple. I mean, they're going to have to travel and talk to many different municipalities around the state on assessing the state versus local responsibility question in each of those locales, and will be undergoing a series of negotiations and discussions with each municipality. Obviously, this stems from the original governor's proposal that came before us this year to have literally wholesale transfers of state responsibility for roads transferring over to local responsibility, and I think most of us in this body were feeling that this was very premature and really not in the best interests of our constituents or the state or local governments. So they will be working with localities at analyzing the situation, and specifically if any transfers are to take place, developing funding sources in the future to take care of this. I wanted to, as long as I'm staying, Mr. Speaker, just to briefly talk about tax stability. I'm surprised that word hasn't been put on the table. We first enacted an 8-cent gasoline tax in the state of Alaska in 1961. I'll have to admit, I wasn't buying gasoline in 1961, so I'm not quite sure what the price per gallon was, but it was undoubtedly 25 to 30 cents a gallon is my guess, so that the tax probably represented about a 30% tax per gallon. Obviously, tax is a flat tax. It doesn't, or it's an absolute amount. It doesn't vary over time. It doesn't vary with inflation, and it doesn't vary with the price of gas. So today, when these assumptions are built, I believe on a $1.15 a gallon tax, 16 cents on that gallon today is only 14%. So, and so I don't think that we're all at all out of line with the inflationary aspects of gasoline prices, nor are we out of line with what other states do throughout the country. And frankly, Mr. Speaker, I don't think we're going to be seeing this type of tax probably for another 15 or 20 years. So this isn't something that we've rushed into, nor is it something that we're taking lightly. And I would say that once addressed, we'll probably not revisit this for a while.
Mason's Manual.
Yes.
Section 102. No member may speak more than once.
Except that to generosity of the speaker.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just had to get up and talk about this so-called taxability. You know, it's so nice that the government doesn't charge us as much as they could really charge us. I mean, that really gets to my heart, the kindness. A taxability in some state is to get the people for everything they can get them for. Saying, well, they can afford it, or they can do this, or we want more government, we want more bureaucracy. I'm not surprised no one brought it up. Why should we bring it up when we're giving hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars away for nothing? What should be the ability of the government to decrease in this state? We talked about the justification of it as prices go up. That's when government should be a lot more concerned as to how they tax the people. When you know prices are going up for food, clothing, shelter, and gasoline, that's the last time in the world they should be taxing people. And now that government, private enterprise, and the economy is going down, let the people use the money for real things, for that helps boost and gives a solid economy, not one that keeps a bureaucracy going that everyone says is too big now. Now, let's not use this tax ability to rationalize this increase.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to comment on this bill in regard to rural Alaska, in particular District 24. But first, I have to remind the body that although the Dalton Highway or the Hall Road is in District 24, that is a business road and not a community road. The bill was characterized as a better characterization of this tax is a user fee, people who benefit from using roads and the ferry system. In District 24, there is no ferry system, although we have three of the largest rivers within the state, the Yukon River, the Kuskokwim River, and the Koyukuk. But there is no marine highway system in the area as large as the state of Texas. And there is approximately 50 miles, and in case my figures are wrong, we could say 100 miles of state road. And I'd just like to bring it to the attention of the body that clearly I believe there's some unfairness here.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 156 finance pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote?
Yes, Mr. Speaker,
from yea to nay. Representative Herman.
From yea to nay.
From yea to nay. Representative Hoffman. From yea to nay. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
21 yeas, 17 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 156, Finance, has passed the House. Is there a letter of intent with that? Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, there is a letter of intent that accompanies the bill. The members should have it in their bill histories. but it appears it's a finance committee letter of intent. It appears in the April 30 House Journal at page 1044. Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the letter of intent.
Hearing objection.
I therefore move the letter of intent.
The letter of intent has been moved. Is there any debate? I am ready for the question. The question is, shall the letter of intent be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Rieger.
From yea to nay, Mr. Speaker.
From yea to nay. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
26 yeas, 12 nays.
The letter of intent has been adopted. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to give notice of reconsideration on my vote on committee substitute for House Bill 156, Finance.
Okay. Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill. Would the clerk at this time please read the next, Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May we please have a brief at ease?
The House, please stand at ease. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe the next is 177. I would move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 177 be put at the bottom of today's calendar.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, House Bill 177 will be moved to the bottom of the calendar. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 222 by the Labor and Commerce Committee, an act relating to occupational licensing and providing for an effective date. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the bill, recommends it do pass, and attaches a zero note with analysis. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, citing Dupass, Kopanen, Ellis, Davidson, Menard, Furtis, and Donnelly. The Finance Committee has had the bill under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 222 Finance with the same title, reports it back as follows with a zero fiscal note with analysis. The report was signed by Porchot, Vice Chair, citing Dupass, Porchot, Larson, and Gall. Having no recommendation, Rieger, Frank, Brown, and Davis. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having one committee substitute, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 222 be adopted.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the CS Finance? Hearing no objection, the committee substitute Finance has been adopted. Does the clerk have any amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no further amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill number 222 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Any objection to the motion to advance to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 222 Finance by the Finance Committee, an act relating to occupational licensing and providing for an effective date.
Third reading, under debate. Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 222 was introduced by the House Labor and Commerce Committee on the request of the Division of Occupational Licensing and the Department of Commerce. House Bill 222 puts all boards and commissions on a biannual licensing renewal program, and it increases penalties for non-licensed practice and substantially increases the disciplinary powers of all boards to more effectively police their own practitioners. The measure also cleans up numerous technical problems in existing statutes. House Bill 222 increases consumer protection, saves the state money, and it makes sense, Mr. Speaker, and I'd ask the body to support it.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 222 Finance pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
34 yeas, no nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 222 Finance has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the final passage of House Bill 222 Finance Committee substitute be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Joint Resolution Number 31 by Springer, Kopanen, and Brown, relating to a Siberian crossing and cultural exchange. The State Affairs Committee has considered the resolution and recommends it due pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Omer, Chairman, citing due pass, Boucher, Menard, Hoffman, Omer, Donnelly, and Martin. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having no amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that House Joint Resolution Number 31 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the motion to advance to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that resolution?
House Joint Resolution 31 by Springer, Kopanen, and Brown, relating to a Siberian crossing and cultural exchange.
Third reading, under debate. Representative Springer.
This is a pretty straightforward, easy to understand resolution. There has been, in recent years, more attempts and executions of visits on both sides, both from the Russians coming over to us and our people going over to Russia. That has been well publicized in the press, and we had some of the art groups here that have just experienced that. It looks like there is a softening of the situation, and it looks like we better have better relations on both sides. It's unfortunate that we have to go completely around the world to get from Nome to the Chukchi Peninsula and vice versa. And the people living on St. Lawrence Island in Wales and Diomede and Shishmaref have a lot of relatives on the other side. They all belong to the same tribe and to the same people. And there is an attempt on the way to have an opportunity to directly visit each other this summer. There may be an economic spin-off if indeed there is going to be a lessening of the restrictions of visiting both sides. And I think with that resolution, we got everything to gain and nothing to lose. And I would appreciate your support.
Ready for the question. The question is, shall House Joint Resolution 31 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
38 yeas, no nays.
House Joint Resolution 31 has passed the House. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 6 by Coghill, relating to designation by the governor of Centrana Mine as a historic site. The Resources Committee has considered the resolution and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Cotton Chairman, concurring Cotton Springer, Pierce Sund, Herman Hoffman, DeVar, and Davidson. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
In second and final reading, being a concurrent resolution, any debate? Representative Porcheau.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just have a question, perhaps, of the Resources Chairman. We do have in Alaska a process and procedure for designating historic sites and places, and I was wondering how this site is related in that process and whether or not it was somehow perhaps rejected as a historic site, or why are we taking this action?
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, it's my understanding that the governor has the ability to designate a site historic if he so chooses. This would be, as it was presented to us, would be an encouraging word from the legislature asking the governor to do so. If it's made a historic site, then the owners of the property there would not have to fulfill the requirements under the under federal law to make it appear as though nothing had ever happened there. In other words, to restore the site as closely as possible to its natural state. The information we got suggested that the property owners would remove the safety hazards, the asbestos, and other things that might cause a threat to the public to public safety. They would also be required to take any efforts necessary to prevent further erosion. And we felt that since it didn't present a threat to the public safety that it could be viewed as a historic site. We saw pictures of it. I've never been there personally. And it would relieve the property owner of a pretty significant burden if they were to be required to remove the buildings.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the Senate Concurrent Resolution 5 pass the House? Or 6? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
38 yeas, no nays.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 6 has passed the House. We have some citations on today's calendar. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have 6 citations on the calendar today. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House approve the 6 citations.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the citations on today's calendar? Hearing no objections, the citations have been adopted. This brings us down to the bottom of the calendar. Would the clerk please make reference to House Bill 177?
House Bill 177 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act relating to the workers' compensation law concerning the second injury fund and providing for an effective date. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 177 and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman. Concurring Donnelly, Copen and Boucher, Davidson, Menard, and Ellis. Furness has no recommendation. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 177 Judiciary with a new title and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Sund Chairman. Signing do pass, Sund, Ulmer, Barnes, Taylor, and Grunberg. Cotton has no recommendation. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute and do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring Adams, Porchot, Larson, Gall, Swackhammer, Boyer, Frank, and Wallace. Having no recommendation, Rieger, Brown, and Davis. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having one committee substitute, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill number 177.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the CS Judiciary? Hearing no objection, the committee substitute Judiciary has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
I do, Mr. Speaker. I have an amendment number 1 by Collins to page 1, line 25, and it is being duplicated right now. Would you like me to read it?
Would the clerk please read that amendment?
After the word fund on line 25, add administrative exercises shall not exceed 5%. Administrative expenses shall not exceed 5% of the total amount of the fund.
Okay. The amendment is being passed out. Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment.
Okay. The amendment. Hearing objections. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The amendment is a little bit tricky in that I'm not sure that the way it is worded it will accomplish exactly what I want. What I'm concerned about is that the department will continue, without establishing some limit, that the department will come back and increase their administrative expenses in order to enhance any other budget shortfalls that they have. I've been involved within the workers' compensation system in the state of Alaska since 1975. And I'm very much aware of the Second Injury Fund, and I am very much aware, strongly believe, that the money requested by the department this year is far more than they need to administer that fund. In reality, the activity in that fund has significantly decreased since 1982 when the rehabilitation law was passed. And the fund is not being really utilized as much. And it seems to me that instead of needing more money to administer, they would need less because there is very little activity on the fund. And all that I want to do is to put some type of mechanism into this legislation so they can continue to come back and increase their administrative expenses. And the problem in doing that is that when there is a lot of activity in the area, the fund will be depleted because it'll be used up. If there's no activity, then the fund amount goes up. I would like to have some discussion from the representative from Anchorage in terms as to whether or not this was discussed if we get the amendment.
Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I share many of the concerns of the prior speaker, and I sympathize with the intent of the amendment. However, I think I would oppose this particular amendment at this time because I agree with the former speaker. It may not accomplish what we really want, and I think what we want is close scrutiny and accounting of the administrative expenses and limiting those to truly what's necessary to administer the second injury fund. Currently, that amount is $123,000, which roughly equates to two positions in the Department of Workmen or the Division of Workmen's Compensation. As chairman of the subcommittee on the labor budget, we did look at this. We did not make any changes this year from that amount that was attributable to administration of the Second Injury Fund. It would be fully my intent next year, for example, on the Department of Labor budget that we, based on the representative from Midtown's comments, that we do a real in-depth look at what exactly are the costs of administrating this program, and to reduce that amount, or should this bill pass, limit the amount of administrative expenses that could come directly from the Second Injury Fund. I would have to say, though, just on the 5% matter, we are now gearing the Second Injury Fund to, it's a contribution of payments made under workman's comp that go into the fund, and that contribution rate varies. It varies depending on how much money is in reserve or how much money is in the fund. We had a real deficit situation develop in 81, and we had major alterations to the program, so that in 81, we reestablished a 6% contribution rate. That dropped to 5% in 86, and currently, with a $2.4 million balance, there's a zero contribution rate. So right now, the fund is extremely healthy, have a lot of money in the bank, and clearly